And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn. What happened to the weekend? It zoomed by, didn't it? Hey, we got a lot of sunshine today. It's a cold day, but I stepped outside not too long ago, and with that sunshine, it's not too bad. There's hardly any wind. Not too bad. And, you know, when you look at January thus far, not too bad compared to last year when it was brutal at this time of the year. We had snow all over the place. We had school closings and delays. We had temperatures down near zero. It was horrible. We may still see that. We probably will. But not now. Not yet. Hey, coming up today, we're going to be talking about pro-life issues. Two guests are with us, and they've been with us for a long time discussing this. Let's say hello to Larry Black, first of all. Larry, good to see you again.
Dave, it is absolutely fantastic to hang out with you again today.
And Michael Harvey is here as well. Michael, same. Good to see you.
It's good to be here, Dave. Thanks very much.
You reminded me, anyway, check and see here, I don't have much volume on your microphone there. Just give me a second here, and I'll check that out. Pep, can we take a spot here, and I will check out this microphone, please? Thanks.
If you're thinking about buying a car, truck, or SUV, or even if you just bought one, make sure you check out the great rates at Armco Credit Union. Through February 28th, you can get a 60-month loan on new and used vehicles for as low as 2.24 annual percentage rate. We'll even refinance your loan from another financial institution. It's never been easier to join, so call today for other rates and terms or visit us at armcocu.com to become a member. Armco Credit Union is an equal opportunity lender and federally insured by NCUA.
Yeah, okay, we found out the microphone gnomes were in here over the weekend and turned off Michael Harvey's microphone. Good to see you again.
Good to see you, Dave. Thanks. It's good to be here. I've been soaking up some of that vitamin D as well.
You were the one that told me you had kind of looked back through the years, and we've been chatting for 15 years now. It's hard to believe.
It is hard to believe. 15 years. It's a good run. It's been a good run.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed it.
Well, we're talking about pro-life issues because this is the week of the annual March for Life. I think I've got that right, Larry.
That's
Black.
Correct.
It's this later this week.
46 consecutive year. It's on Friday. It's going to be a beautiful day. It's going to be 43 degrees and dry in Washington, D.C.
I'm glad you know that already. I'm not sure the weather folks do.
Could be a little snow on the ground from over the weekend, but the no snow anticipated on Friday, and it should be warm.
I wonder if the, and Michael mentioned this to me, we were chatting a little bit before we went on the air here today. I wonder if the partial government shutdown will affect the March for Life, because the people usually meet with the representatives and so on, do they not?
I'm sure the representatives are paid, you know, for the government. But you know what? That's a good point. Haven't even thought about it.
But I mean, the buildings, I don't know. Are they?
Yeah, I would think that the mall there is going to be affected. Garbage collection is going to be affected. Larry is right. Our representatives were paid, but even if they weren't paid, those representatives would probably be there because it's something that they're passionate about.
But is there access to the congressional office buildings where they usually meet with them? Who knows? Huh?
Yeah, probably not. Mm. Probably not.
Well, that could all change by Friday.
Right. It could.
We don't know. Yeah. And I'm sure that many of the local lawmakers will make arrangements to meet with people elsewhere if congressional office buildings happen to be shut down.
Yeah, and if they do, I mean, I haven't heard any information related to that, but I'm sure there's other people that are more in the know.
So what happens at the March for Life? There is actually a march, right, by the people who converge on D.C. from all over?
Correct. It starts out with a rally right at the Washington Monument. Over the years, there's been really a full spectrum of speakers. Ronald Reagan has spoken there. Mike Pence has spoken in person a number of times, including last year. President Trump spoke, not in person, but at the rally. Usually a great
roster of senators, representatives, other key people that speak well for babies and for the pro-life movement.
Does anybody know how this all got started? You said this was 46 years ago?
46 years ago. It was and the reason it's held in January is that was when the Roe versus Wade decision was made.
Oh, Supreme Court decision.
Supreme Court decision, mm-hmm. Still considered the worst Supreme Court decision in the history of our country. Made on the basis of right to privacy by Chief Justice Blackmun, and it was a concept that has no basis and has not ever been used before, except as it relates to the abortion issue.
I wonder what the vote was. I do not know. You know, was it a split vote? Was it fairly lopsided? I have to look that up sometime, I guess.
There was a couple different votes. So I want to be a little careful here, but I believe the first vote was 5-4.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was another vote that was called, it was actually dealing with our own governor, Governor Casey, that was then decided by, I think, a 7-2 vote and affirming the I'll call it just the concept of abortion. It's not the right wording.
It legalized abortion.
Not demand at any stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it was not a mandate, but it legalized it.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Now, there are some countries, Ireland most notably, that just last year voted to remove their ban on abortion,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't any court decision. They had a referendum. They put it on the ballot to the people, and it was widely advertised. It was widely debated on Irish TV and in the newspapers and everything, and it passed overwhelmingly, 2-1,
yeah,
to remove the restrictions on abortion in Ireland.
Yep.
So our pro-life supporters here in the United States moving in the wrong direction? Are they moving against the tide?
Well, I think truth always moves against the tide, doesn't it? Truth always swims upstream. You know, I was telling Larry earlier, I think, you know, bottom line is that these are all symptomatic of a culture that's come unhinged in many respects. You know, I mean, you have Ireland that has been for centuries predominantly a Catholic, you know, and so where has truth gone? And where has even the place where truth is supposed to be lifted up gone? I mean, you have churches and denominations across the country and across the world that are abandoning truth for convenience, all sorts of issues. And so it's exactly what we wanted. We wanted free sex, and what do we get? We get diseases, and we wanted free drugs, and what do we get? You know, it's the consequences of our own choices.
The makeup of the U.S. Supreme Court has changed markedly.
Yes.
Do you think this issue will come before the High Court again in the foreseeable future?
Well, I'm not sure if the broader issue will, but there's certainly going to be challenges to certain elements of the law with Justice Kavanaugh being part of the new Supreme Court. His nomination was I don't think I'm understating it supremely in all ways tried to be defeated because of that exact concern, Dave. You know, we've had this discussion before. You know, if the Supreme Court would ever overturn Roe versus Wade, it doesn't mean that abortion wouldn't be legal. It would mean that it goes back to the states. But there's going to be a continuing of different things, whether it's things such as sex selection or choosing to kill babies in the third trimester that most Americans, I think, would say that this is wrong. And you know, there's lots of opportunities to challenge those things on some pretty good legal ground.
I do not know how abortion was legislated here in the U.S. prior to Roe versus Wade. I assume that it was the purview of the states at that time, too. So we would have individual states had vastly different abortion laws before Roe versus Wade.
There was a few states, New York in particular, that did have laws making it legal. Most states across America did not have abortion as a legal right. But then after Roe versus Wade, that that overturned probably somewhere between 40 to 43 states across the country as far as their laws that were presently on the books.
Mm-hmm. There are some states that still enact restrictions on abortion, not outlawing it altogether, but restrictions on abortion. There are some restrictions here in Pennsylvania. Ohio, most recently, had their state legislature approved a so-called heartbeat bill that would ban abortions once a fetus, an unborn baby, had a heartbeat. That was vetoed by the outgoing governor, John Kasich, during his last month in office. I assume with a new governor that will probably come up again in Ohio. I don't know. I haven't seen anything since the new year.
Oh, I'm sure it will, too. And I know a lot of the some of the strategy behind some of the states that are more pro-life leaning is, you know, taking smaller ground, because eventually these smaller bills like that heartbeat bill, someone's going to challenge it, and it's going to make its way to the Supreme Court. So there's, I think that it's, I'm still convinced that the battle is not necessarily in the Supreme Court. I mean, we even culturally, there has been a shift in the number of abortions being done. I mean, to me, even one abortion is a travesty, because it's a life that's being snuffed out. But the fact that information, technology, science is showing us more and more where life begins, this generation, probably more than any generation, is a pro-life generation, because the information they have accessible to them, it's undeniable. And so the arguments that used to be the common arguments of why abortion ought to be legal aren't holding water anymore.
Yeah, in addition to that, Dave, you have challenged us in the past to say, where's the common ground?
Mm-hmm.
And that's always been healthy dialogue that we've had on the show. But part of it could be, okay, when does the baby's heart start beating? When are their brain waves start to be able to be recorded? When does the baby feel pain? And the fourth one is, when can the baby live outside the mother's womb? So
now these are all different thresholds, by the way.
Different thresholds. And these are some of the things that are being brought up and passed in certain states. Texas has been very strong, and you know, particularly some of the states in the South, as far as saying, wait a minute, can't we agree that when a baby feels pain, we should no longer be able to do an abortion? I mean, is that common ground? And, you know, people that are willing to objectively look at the issue say, hey, that is a reasonable approach.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no reason to give up, because there's lots of opportunities to save the lives of, I mean, I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say thousands and hundreds of thousands of babies.
By the way, in all fairness to John Kasich, the outgoing governor in Ohio, he did sign one of the most restrictive abortion laws in the nation, which bans a common method used as early as 12 weeks into pregnancy. But he vetoed the so-called heartbeat bill. So he didn't veto everything. He just vetoed that one portion. Do we know how early there's a heartbeat? Is there any scientific evidence on that?
Detectable before the woman knows she's pregnant.
Yeah, and the heartbeat is typically known 18 to 25 days after the sperm and the egg form together.
So that's less than a month?
Let's just say a month, and that's actually pretty conservative. So Michael's exactly right. I mean, in 1973, we didn't have visibility to a lot of the scientific, unbiased information. We do now. My daughter had a baby in August, and I watched a 15-minute video of the baby doing, you know, somersault in her mother's womb. Which, you know, the thought of that would have been, you know, who are you kidding? There's no way that we'll ever be able to do that. But with technology today, and Michael's right. Today's generation, the young people of today, are more pro-life than their parents, and maybe even in some cases their grandparents, because they have access to accurate information, scientific facts.
And, I mean, let's also consider the fact that at conception, you have the four necessary ingredients that biology says is life. You know, the four necessary ingredients: metabolism. You've got a cell that's nourishing itself. Mm-hmm. You have growth. You have reaction to stimuli, and you've got reproduction. And you know, the argument is my body. I can choose to do with my body what I want. Well, at the moment of conception, that child has its own separate set of DNA. And so, you know, that to me, again, I think science is just is showing us more and more and more that life is beginning earlier and earlier than people ever thought, especially back in 1973.
There are some people that argue that you should consider a fetus, a baby, a child, whenever there's a first movement, you know, whenever the child is able to move inside the womb. Quickening, I think, is the medical term for it, or perhaps not the medical term, but the common term.
Yeah,
I'm sure you've heard about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You've mentioned that before. You've mentioned that a number of times. And still, you know, if that's going to be the threshold, that's much, much earlier than I think people were commonly aware of back when this decision was made.
There was, and I've been following the news out of Ireland. I don't keep track of all the pro-life news stories from all over the world, but Ireland's interesting since they had that referendum last year. Mm-hmm. And the people overwhelmingly voted 2-1 to lift the ban on abortions in Ireland. But they've had, it was a very vague, that was about it. That was the question, which left a whole raft of, you know, unresolved issues to try to implement that into law. And there was a proposal late last year, I found this fascinating, and I don't know whether it passed or not in the Irish Parliament. It was a proposal that would have made it mandatory to administer pain relief to the unborn child during an abortion.
Hmm.
Now, when you think about that and think about the ramifications of that, what does it tell you?
Kind of ironic, isn't it? Well, it's an inadvertent admission in my mind. It's an inadvertent admission that there's life here that people don't want to acknowledge.
Seems that way. I saw that it was an article in the Irish Times, actually. It was just a few weeks back.
Yeah.
The headline was, "Aborted Unborn Feeling Pain is an Inconvenient Truth."
Yes.
Well, yeah.
It is an inconvenient truth.
It's a truth that they probably don't want to look at too hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But when you think about that, administering a pain shot to...
Well, who's the patient in that case?
Well, it would be the baby.
Yeah. That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, right. And, you know, in today's world, what else has been interesting is how often that operations are done in the baby while they are in their mother's womb. And a few years back, there was an incredible picture of the baby holding on to the doctor's finger.
Reaching out of the womb, reaching out of the womb and grabbing a hold of the doctor's finger as they were trying to do that surgery.
They've done heart surgery
yeah.
in utero,
right?
Which seems phantasmagorical, actually, when you think about it.
Pretty amazing, if you ask me. I mean, it's a human body is an amazing, amazing creation, and it, you know, just baffles me.
Are there still a lot of people from our area who travel to D.C. for the March for Life every year?
There are. They are a faithful group, and throughout all of Butler, Dave, you know, from Cranberry to Zelianople, Herman, North Catholic High School, West Middlesex, and we usually have anywhere from 7 to 10 buses that go each year. This year's on the low end side with 7. But we often have as many as 400, 500 people from Butler County. There's people represented from every single state in the country. And I've been down there when there's over 100,000 people at the rally. Mm. And sometimes there's probably even been more. But
do you have a phone number for? Can you still make arrangements to go down on that on one of those buses if you want to?
Absolutely, yeah. Gretchen Crary has been in charge of this march.
Long time.
46 years.
Long time.
Gretchen is one of the most faithful ladies I've ever met. And her number is 724-898-2529. So the march is going to be this Friday. Typically leave around 6 in the morning, get home about 11 o'clock at night. You know, it's a straight shot down, get dropped off at the rally, get picked up after spending some time with your congressmen or senators based upon schedules. Grab a bite to eat on the way home, and the good news is it's Friday, so you get Saturday to recover,
mm-hmm.
which is, I think it's, I love it when the march is on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's, you know, earlier in the week, the morning comes pretty quick, but and you know, I'm going to throw out the suggestion that parents take their kids.
Mm-hmm.
Because Michael and I have both learned from previous times, it is a wonderful education, education to participate in our democracy, opportunity to really see the White House, the Washington Monument, the Supreme Court, the Capitol, and just to have an appreciation for what our country represents. We're not a perfect country, but we have the opportunity to influence our government, which is a sacred right, and it's one of the reasons why people from all around the world want to, you know, be an American. And you know, this is a great opportunity to say, hey, you might not agree with everything that our government does, but you have an opportunity to also voice your thoughts, and you know, some people get killed for doing that in other countries. With us, it's an inalienable right.
Mm-hmm.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
We'll give out that phone number again for any folks who want to make last minute plans to go down there. It's a good thing it wasn't today, by the way. I guess Washington is pretty much shut down with a foot of snow.
Right. Yeah.
Schools are all closed. The federal government, what was left of it, is also shut down. We already had a partial shutdown, and mm-hmm. now the whole federal government is shut down today.
Yeah. Makes you wonder how quick they're going to be to move that snow, too.
Well, that's true. I always kind of shake my head and chuckle that, you know, any opportunity there is to shut down the federal government, they'll do it. When around here, we'd say, oh, well, we got a big snow. Okay, we'll press on.
Yeah, that's right.
Maybe delay school openings for a couple of hours, but we'll press on with our work.
Yeah.
Federal government, hey, that's it, baby. We're done. We're shut down. We can't deal with this. And I'm sure the organizers of the March for Life are keeping their fingers crossed about that potential winter storm that may hit the eastern part of the country by the end of this week. We'll see about that. There's a little too early to worry about that. We'll take a break. We'll continue our conversation. We're talking pro-life issues on the It's Your Turn program today. And we will return with more discussion right after this word.
Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler answers your questions about cremation. Here are the most asked questions. Should you consider cremation for your loved one? Is it appropriate for your family? How would they feel about it? What's the appropriate funeral service? And what's the cost? These are all good questions. Cremation offers three advantages: simplicity, convenience, and it's local. Thompson Miller's cremation services are right here in Butler at our own newly created facility. We assure you that your loved one will never leave our care at any point in the process. Let's talk it over privately here at Thompson Miller in Butler, or call us at 724-287-3706, 287-3706, or online at www.thompson-miller.com. Thompson Miller, at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller, time-honored excellence.
Welcome back. We're talking pro-life issues today with Michael Harvey and Larry Black visiting with us in advance of the annual March for Life. Coming up this Friday, there was legislation, I'm not sure whether it's been introduced yet, or I guess Senator Don White is drafting it. And we just had this story a week or so ago here on WISR. Senator Don White is a senator, represents parts of our listening area in Harrisburg. He's drafting legislation that will hold women who knowingly and willingly use illegal drugs while pregnant accountable for abuse of children. This was in the news last year. We had a rather sensational case here in the Butler area of a woman who had been using heroin, I believe. I don't remember the exact circumstances, and she was had a late term pregnancy. Although, as I recall the details of the case, the district attorney initially filed charges, and then they were dropped because it was ruled unconstitutional, the way Pennsylvania law is right now. I think I had a quote from Senator White here. Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruled December 28th, just a couple of weeks ago, that mothers who use illegal drugs while pregnant cannot be charged with abuse of their newly born children under the state's current child protection law. Essentially, the Supreme Court, this is the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, ruled that Pennsylvania's Child Protective Services law does not recognize fetuses as children. Now, this was a quote from Senator Don White. This ruling is truly disturbing, and I believe it will have grave consequences. I will soon introduce legislation to address that ruling. My legislation will be designed to specifically address situations where a pregnant woman knowingly and willfully takes illegal drugs. Now, that's the last I've heard of it, but it was just last week that the news came out from Senator White's office that he was going to introduce this legislation.
Well, to me, that seems to border along the same irony that you mentioned about the administering pain medications to unborn children. A person can be tried with double murder in our country if they kill a woman who's pregnant. And so that's consistent with the pro-life stance of life, but then there's inconsistency in what you just read. So it's our culture's unhinged, Larry, Dave, and Larry.
The numbers of abortions in the U.S. are actually declining.
Yes.
They have been over the past decade.
Yeah,
maybe
that leans to what you were talking about, Larry, when you said you don't think that the final answer to this is in the courts.
Correct. So probably 10 years ago, there was probably the consistency of number of abortions per year was around 1.5 million abortions per year.
That's in the U.S.?
In the U.S., just U.S., yeah. That number is somewhere between 900,000 to a million now. Now, recognize that is still a huge number. Our population is around 325 million people here in the United States. Since Roe versus Wade, there's been somewhere between, depending upon what source, somewhere between 54 to 60 million abortions done. That's about 19% of our population that's alive today. And so, you know, there's various reasons for that decrease. Some of it is really good, such as scientific, informative information that helps people make good decisions. There's incredible resources to help moms if they have a baby, because we recognize that, you know, not everybody's quite ready to have a baby, and so there's reasons to say nobody is saying I have to have an abortion. The statistic that still stands out to me is 86% of women who have abortions, it is a result of incredible pressure either from their boyfriend, their husband, or their family. So it's not a choice that many, particularly women, go into saying this is what I want to do. It's something that they feel like they're forced to do. You know, there's when you have 54 million abortions done over the last 46 years, you know, there's less people as well, less younger people that, you know, are childbearing age. So a couple different reasons there. But at the same time, I take encouragement in saying, and certainly if we look at Common Ground, let's make abortion rare. And let's also create a situation where we recognize that women who are in that situation have support, help, and even, you know, financial and health provisions to help them, you know, in their journey.
There are some states where laws have been proposed and crafted and introduced and so on and so forth that make exceptions. For example, they will make an exception in the case of rape. Michael Harvey, do you have any thought on some of these exceptions?
I recently heard a woman share her testimony who became pregnant as a result of the rape. And she has become, I wish I had her name handy, but she's become a real advocate for women who get pregnant as a result of rape. And one statistic that she shared in her testimony was that she and her husband decided to keep the baby. And she said that, and Planned Parenthood won't want you to know this, but she said between 70% and 80% of women who become pregnant through rape keep their babies. And that to me is a startling statistic, because that of course is something that you hear a lot, is that we need to make it easy and accessible for people who rape, incest, and health of the mother. And of course, health of the mother is a moving target. Health of the mother is a hugely broad category. Mental health of the mother, that fits into that as well. And so certainly rape is a horrible tragedy to women. It is. It's a crime, and it ought to be punished severely. But the fact that it's the fact that 70-80% of women who experience that are keeping their babies is, I think, something that needs to be communicated.
What about incest? there are chances. I'm not a medical professional, but there are chances that a baby could mm-hmm. could have significant problems if they were conceived in an incestuous relationship.
Yeah, and there's also a significant percentage of those babies that never make it out of the uterus because of those complications and mm-hmm. those deformities. That's a hard one. That really is a hard one to me.
Well, that's another, when you hear these proposed regulations, and I'm paraphrasing here, but abortion should be outlawed with the exception of rape and incest.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When Michael and I come here, David, it's not that we have all the answers. I mean, we create the dialogue. Incest, to me, is, I don't know, on my scale, one of the worst crimes. Sometimes that crime is hidden because there's an abortion done. I want that perpetrator to face the full consequences of their action. That's an abominable sin. On the rape situation, I don't want to say that's easy either. But when they've interviewed women who were victims of rape, it was interesting. They were victims of rape, and then they had an abortion. What they felt worse about was actually the abortion. They had no control over being raped, but they did make the choice for having the abortion. And so it's interesting. And you know, I've gone on record as far as saying, okay, where's the common ground? So if I have, and I just was looking at this yesterday, 0.2% of abortions are related to rape. Okay, 0.2%.
It's a tiny percentage.
It's a super, super tiny percent. If you have rape, incest, and life of the mother, it's about 1.5%. The statistics, it's always less than 2%. And in those cases, I'm saying, hey, listen, if that issue saves 900,000 babies, I'm going to say, hey, I'm going to try to create middle ground with the opposition to for the greater good of our society as well as for babies and mothers.
What about cases, and I'm sure this is rare too, but it happens. I've seen it in the movies where, you know, it's pretty much guaranteed that the mother's going to die. You know, if she continues with the pregnancy for a variety of different different reasons. So then, man, you've got a dilemma worthy of Solomon there, because you've got a baby in the womb and a mother that's going to die if the pregnancy goes to term. Gosh, yeah. What do you do there?
Yeah, well, I fall back to what Larry just said. You know, if rape, incest, and life of the mother is less than 2% of all abortions, if I can save 98% compared to the 2%, that to me is, yeah, I'm still settling because life is life.
Mm-hmm.
But for issues of common ground, yeah, I think that's something worth fighting for. You know, I don't. Yeah,
I'm going to share a personal example. My youngest brother, his girlfriend in high school, that he continued to keep in touch with, had two babies, and then she got cancer when she was pregnant with the third. And the doctor said, you have two choices. You either take the treatment for the cancer, or else you're going to die.
But the treatment would have affected the unborn baby.
If she had done that, she chose not to take the treatment.
Mm.
And I'm not saying that should be the law. What I'm saying is that's an incredibly courageous decision that she made. It just illustrates that life is not easy sometimes.
I think those decisions sometimes often are easier when there's something larger that informs that decision, and I'm referring to faith. You know, I look at a situation of the life of a mother. And I've, like Larry shared that very personal testimony, I don't know anybody personally, but I've certainly heard the stories very similar, where women who have, and husbands for that matter, husbands, mothers and fathers, recognizing that this is coming around the corner, and they see this diagnosis, and they get this diagnosis, and they've made the decision, you know, this is a life, and we're going to stand on the principles that we have, that our faith has communicated to us. And they have found really a miracle has occurred. The life of the mother is spared. The baby is fine. And, of course, that's not always the case. But you know, there was still a decision to continue this pregnancy because they had a bigger perspective on life. There's a woman out in Katanning that I'm familiar with that had received a horrible diagnosis about her child, and her child was born. She decided to keep that baby to term, and that child was born, and that child has undergone a significant amount of operations, and the doctors told the family this child will not live more than a week. It's been over 2 years. Child is still alive, and this child has brought tremendous joy into this family's life.
That brings us, Michael, to another area. There are tests now that can determine deformities in a baby while still in the womb. Yeah. There are tests now that can determine if a child is going to be born with Down syndrome, for mm-hmm. example. And it's my understanding, I don't have numbers here, but it's my understanding that some abortions at least are performed on this basis.
Yeah.
You know, where it's the preborn tests show the Down syndrome, and so the baby's aborted.
Yeah, my wife and I had four pregnancies. We lost one, and we declined those tests in every pregnancy. And the reason we declined those tests is it wasn't going to change the outcome for us.
Mm-hmm.
Our decision, we were going to carry this baby to term, and we were going to have this baby regardless of the results. And of course that's my worldview that leads me to believe that, and it's a worldview that is faith based, and so that's where I'm going to land on that issue. With other people it may be very different, but we've, you know, and it was almost like we had our arms twisted in the doctor's office. No, you need to take this test, and we're like, why? It's not going to change the fact that we're going to love this child regardless of how they come out of the womb.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a test of the amniotic fluid, right. I believe. Yeah.
Not foolproof, though.
Yeah,
not foolproof.
And Dave, Pam, and I had four children. One of them passed away early in pregnancy, but we had the same decision and chose not to as well, for the same reason that Michael and Elizabeth made the decision. And I'm not saying that should be the case for everybody, but. We believe that whatever child that God gave us, we were going to love.
Those are some tough issues that we've talked about.
Yeah.
There's another issue that I think, I don't know, maybe the majority of people might agree on, that abortion should not be used as birth control, especially in today's day and age with the numerous methods of birth control that are available. For goodness sakes, why would you resort to abortion for that? I mean, if that's what you chose to do, you know?
Yeah, it's quick and convenient. It is. I mean, when you consider the fact that the 60% of all abortions are women in their 20s to 30s, there are consequences to our choices, aren't there?
This number's been consistent. 44% of all abortions are either the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, or seventh abortion that a woman has had. So it clearly is
multiple abortions. You're saying
multiple abortions, yeah.
Mm. And it's clearly contraception.
Yeah,
yeah.
But contraception, if you go back 40 or 50 years, it's a different story. But my goodness, there are numerous methods of contraception available today that are. Mm-hmm. Some of them more highly effective than others, but some of them extremely effective. They're not expensive. What are these people living under a rock that they don't, you know, they don't know that if they have sex, they're going to have a baby?
Well, I Larry and I were talking at lunch, and we live in a culture that is more and more we're not held accountable for the choices we make. And you know, I think we're reaping what we sow. You know, this is the culture we wanted. We don't want any restraints. We don't want anybody telling us what to do. We certainly don't want the church telling us what to do. We don't want our parents telling us what to do. This is what we live with. These are the consequences of our choices.
Well, let me ask a similar question. Should abortions be allowed because you want a boy and it's a girl? you know, you
sex selection.
Sex
that,
selection, gender
that
selection.
That can be determined in advance now, too.
Absolutely.
Although, I've got to be honest with you, you see some of these ultrasound pictures and you say, okay.
Yeah.
you can tell whether that's a boy or a girl. I'm happy for you.
Yeah, 4D is amazing, though. 4D, I mean, you see the ultrasounds, that's probably the older picture.
Is that
pretty good?
Four
dimension is, you can see around the whole baby.
Yeah, even you can see it, Dave.
Well, that's another example then, Larry, of you know, to me that raises a whole new set of ethical questions if you're going to start using abortion because you don't care for the sex of the baby that you're carrying.
Yeah.
Well, in China, 99% of the babies born are males. That's not because of the fact that, you know, that's the way it works out. That happens because in that culture, a boy who becomes a man, you know, takes over the responsibility of the family. And so they're allowed to have one child. And so 99% of the babies that are killed are girls.
I read a story on The Wire that they're changing that, though.
Mm-hmm. They are.
In China. For a very pragmatic reason.
Yes.
Their birth rate is declining markedly.
Yep.
And in fact, they used to have a rule in China that you can only one child,
right.
You know, each couple could only have one child. And then, as you said, Larry, boys were preferred.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that became so common that now they don't have enough
girls.
Young women
no.
of childbearing age, and their population is declining.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. If there's one, you know, if you go to a dance and there's one girl and 99 guys, I mean, even the good-looking guys, you know, are going to have to struggle to win that battle.
Well, that's in China. They still have a lot of people, but they're reaping the results of that governmental policy now to the effect that it's had a noticeable decline in their birth rate.
Yeah,
yeah.
So one of the last times we spoke, I want you to get ready for this, Dave.
Because
one of the things that we said is abstinence is a potential solution to this issue, and you said, Larry, I don't think that's a really great idea. So, but what I want to communicate to you is I was reading the paper last week, and I thought of you because Tim Tebow, who has been a very vocal and clear advocate of abstinence, just got engaged to Miss Universe of 2017. She's from South America. So I think there's some benefits of maybe taking that position. And I'm not saying everybody gets to marry Miss Universe, but I just thought I'd share that with you.
I surely said more than just. I don't think it's a good idea.
We'll give you a chance to defend that. What do you think?
I think what I probably said was, I'm not sure how practical that is.
Yeah, that's probably what you said.
You know, if you're talking about, especially you know, young people, teenagers and adults, you know, I wasn't commenting on the morality of it. I was
correct.
Saying. How practical is it to suggest abstinence?
Oh, I think it's very practical. I mean, I think the practical benefits of abstinence are unbelievable. STDs, you know, there's these commercials now not requiring, but giving kids this opportunity at age 13, 14, 15 to take this shot to prevent them from getting STDs and from you know, there is a prevention for STDs without medicine. It's called abstinence. And you know, you don't have to worry about the consequences of an unplanned pregnancy when you're abstinent. I mean, reality is when my needs and my selfish needs and my drives get reduced down to an animalistic behavior, then really we're no different than the animals. But we are different than the animals.
Well, the latest statistics indicate that premarital sex among young people is on the decline. Have you seen
that's
those
good.
Stories?
Yeah, that's
no,
good.
I agree with you. I've seen some similar stories as well. I'm not sure if I know the total reasons. Sexually transmitted disease is probably part of it.
I don't know.
What else? What
I
else
would
is,
say so.
I mean, some maybe have said, hey, this really isn't a satisfying lifestyle of always. And, you know, if you're a young lady, I think it's actually pretty healthy saying, I don't think I have to go to bed with you if, you know, in order to continue the relationship. I feel like I'm enough all by myself.
We need to take one more break, I think, right? We do? Okay, we'll come back and talk a few more pro-life issues with our guests. Larry Black, Michael Harvey are visiting with us on It's Your Turn today. We'll be back right after these words. One of our sponsors on the program today is Gone Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. They're located just off Newcastle Road in the Shockey Mini Storage Complex. That's right behind Villa Grande and King's Restaurants. You know where they are? Right behind there. Gone Postal Butler. What do? They package your items for shipping. Very convenient. I've utilized their services. Very quick. Very convenient. You don't have to worry about finding the right size box or the, you know, the bubble wrap or the mailing labels or any of that stuff. Just take your items up there and they'll do it for you. They'll pack them up. You can ship them any way you want, whether you want to go UPS or U.S. Postal Service or FedEx, that's your choice. They also offer copying service, scanning service, faxing. You can rent a temporary mailbox there. They have an official notary. You can even grab a greeting card if you want to include that in your package. They're open Monday through Friday. Call them for more info, 724-841-0044. Gone Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. We'll be right back. The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. Welcome back. We're talking pro-life issues with us here in the studio, Larry Black, Michael Harvey, who have been involved in this for many, many years now. 15 years anyway, I guess.
15 years on the radio, but certainly 15 years longer. Longer than 15 years.
The annual March for Life, yep, is coming up this Friday in Washington, D.C. What about the issue of capital punishment? We talk about this, and we have in the past, and it continues to make news, as many countries have banned capital punishment. In fact, the United States is one of the few countries in the world that still permits it.
Dave, this is the topic that I think you have challenged me, and maybe Michael too, but certainly myself, significantly. And I love this topic in a pro-life conversation, because I think that it challenges me in some new ways. And so let me look at it this way. Let's look at it. Does the gentleman, the man who killed 13 people at the Jewish synagogue in Pittsburgh in October, innocent people, it is clearly he who did the crime. Does he deserve capital punishment? And I have landed is saying, to kill an innocent person is wrong, but it is not wrong to kill a person that, without a shadow of the doubt, has committed a crime that justifies that.
Michael Harvey, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts on Larry's question is, I'm going to go so far as to say yes, I think he is deserving of capital punishment, because he took it upon himself to take life, and he doesn't have that right to do. And so if he takes it upon himself to take a life, then I think the only just punishment is to surrender your own by means of the state, who has that authority and that power.
Well, you know, there would be some people who would argue, if you don't think there should be any exception for rape or incest for abortion, then how can you possibly argue that there should be an exception for capital punishment, depending on the degree of the crime? After all, pro-life is pro-life.
Mm-hmm. I know. And I've heard that argument before, but I think it's completely consistent. I mean, the value is life. Again, we have a life that is not defined by me. It's not defined by the woman. It's not defined by our culture. It's defined by somebody else. It's defined by its creator. And to me, the creator is the one who has the right to take it or keep it. But the creator has given that right to the state, that when someone takes it upon themselves to end life, their life is the only proper recompense for the life that they took. And that's why, to me, it's consistent to hold to a pro-life view and a pro-capital punishment view.
What about a person who has an abortion or the abortion provider?
Well,
are they taking innocent life?
I would say that, yes, they are taking innocent lives.
These are not easy questions.
No, they're not.
That we're discussing. I think as Larry said earlier, we don't even begin to say we've got all the answers here, but it's food for thought. It's food for discussion.
It is food for thought. And, you know, that's a hard one, because I think there are a lot of women who have abortions in ignorance because the truth isn't communicated to them.
Well, are you talking about the women, or are you talking about the doctors who actually do the abortions?
Either.
Both.
Yeah.
I think the doctor should be held accountable, absolutely.
Yeah, I put the responsibility on the doctor more than I do the woman, because I believe that there's a lot of circumstances that could be driving that. But you bring up a great question, and if I use the same logic as the man who killed the people at the synagogue, he killed innocent lives knowingly, intentionally, willfully. Dave, I almost believe that you could make a case for that, and I've never thought about that. So that one I've got to process a little bit more, but thanks for challenging me like that.
People's views on this change, they go back and forth. The more they think about it and talk about it, which is our whole purpose in gathering here today, is to generate thought and discussion. I see that one of the speakers at the March for Life coming up at the end of this week on Friday in Washington is a former director of Planned Parenthood, former clinic director. Her name is Abby Johnson.
Yeah.
Who has now changed her way of thinking, and she will, in fact, be speaking on Friday in D.C.
And that's not, she's not, she wouldn't be the first one that has spoken. There was a Planned Parenthood director in Texas that ran, four or five clinics. Very, very lucrative. And money certainly is a huge motivator. But she, many, many years ago, recognized.
Well, even didn't Jane Roe, prior to her death, change her views on this? Am I remembering that correctly?
McCovey. McCovey, yeah.
She was listed as Jane Roe in the Supreme Court decision.
That's exactly what happened. And
McCovey, McCorvey.
She clearly communicated that there was individuals that used her as what's the word?
Guinea pig.
Yeah,
to push their agenda
to further the case, and she became one of the most outstanding speakers for the pro-life movement. You can also talk about Bernard Nathanson, who was frankly the leader of the abortion industry back in '73, and was the leader of National Abortion Rights Action League, and it was called NARO. But Abby Johnson is a good person to talk about with the march, because Planned Parenthood does 50% of all the abortions in the United States. 8 out of the top 10 abortion clinics in Pennsylvania are Planned Parenthood facilities. So you're talking about a group that, frankly, is the leader of the abortion industry and is responsible for a lot of the false rhetoric that goes on in conversations, which does not mean that they're not powerful, which doesn't mean that they don't have the ear of a lot of key individuals, Tom Wolf in particular, here in the state of Pennsylvania. They get $500 million of revenue every year from our federal government.
I always come out of our conversations thinking. And I think that's good.
Huh? It is good.
Well, thanks for challenging us, Dave.
That's good. Phone number again, Larry Black, for folks who joined us a little late, anyone who's interested in making a last-minute reservation to go down on one of the buses leaving from Butler County for D.C. this Friday.
Yeah, so the person you want to talk to is Gretchen Carreri, just a fantastic lady. Her number down in Valencia is 724-898-2529. There's buses leaving from Middlesex Township, from Cranberry, Zelianople, Herman, Butler, North Catholic High School. And you want to talk about a lifetime memory and an opportunity to truly do something that impacts you for a long period of time. It's definitely worth the investment.
Larry Black, Michael Harvey visiting with us today. Good to see the two of you again.
Good to see you, Dave.
And, good Lord willing, we'll talk again.
I look forward to it. Thank you, Dave. Yeah.
Okay, that wraps up our program for today. Thanks for being with us. We've got Penguin hockey, not tonight, tomorrow night, right? Tomorrow night, the Penguins are in San Jose. You can stay up late again and listen to the Penguins here on WISR. I'm Dave Mullarkey. Nice to have you with us today.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Mullarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Mullarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.